theoretically possible.
Why waste time?
But it doesn't make any sense.
Discovery Houston, press to ATO.
3, 2, 1.
Good morning, Quinn. How are you doing today?
Hello, my love. Good. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I hear that there's a lot on your mind.
There's lots in my brain today.
I'm excited to learn about it.
Yeah. I mean, we woke up really early this morning, just naturally, which was really nice. I love when that happens.
Right.
You know, and I think the more often we do it, the more it happens. It's just like anything else. You just got to practice.
Yeah. Waking up early sets you up to go to bed early, which is a better way to live, in my opinion.
Well, it's our preference. You know, some people have a different work preference. Like, some people really like working in the evening as opposed to the morning. So as long as you get those hours in, that's really all that matters. But you and I have definitely enjoyed our morning time, being early birds.
Very peaceful and quiet.
And it's especially nice being on the East Coast because you know for sure no one is going to be bothering you at 5:30 in the morning on the East Coast.
Right. Yeah, you know, people are going to bed.
People are going to bed, yeah. So, but anyways, yeah, so I'm really excited to talk with you about a couple of things that are in my mind.
Right on.
Based on, you know, some of the different things that I read and listened to this morning. Really interesting stuff. So one thing that I wanted to talk to you about is, have you heard about what Amazon is doing related to podcasting world?
They have Audible, right?
They have Audible. It is a podcasting platform, but it's usually mostly used for audiobooks.
Okay. I'm not sure what they're doing. I'm assuming they're investing into podcasting.
Yes, they are. So they're investing into, so what they're doing is they're putting certain podcasts on Amazon Music for free.
That's exciting.
Which is interesting, yeah, because Amazon Music is not free in general.
Right, you have to have a Prime account.
You have to have a Prime account. So they're putting that up. I guess they're doing certain podcast deals with people like Will Smith and some other musicians and stuff like that.
People with a strong influence.
Exactly. Kind of like what Spotify is doing, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit more. So they're not only doing that though, but they're doing, which is really interesting and I'm excited to see how this all plays out. Is they own Twitch, you know, the video platform where people are streaming and watching others play games or do whatever it is that they want, right?
Live video feed, correct?
Exactly. It's live video feed and it's really, really popular. What they're doing is they're actually going to make all the podcasts, especially the ones that they sign, available on Twitch as well. So you can just watch people talk.
That's very interesting.
It is really interesting. So, and they're going to, I'm assuming they're going to find some way to monetize that for the podcast.
Awesome.
Podcasters.
Well, the Twitch platform seems like it's already set up for monetization.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you know very much about the Twitch platform?
I know that Lewis was showing people how to do something with sneakers. We have a friend called Lewis. He owns a sneaker store called Direct Kicks. Get your shoes online.
Shout out.
And he was, I think, opening up beater boxes or something like that. And he got, it was maybe like $100 or $200 check in the mail, like for maybe a month of like playing around. He didn't take it too seriously. And now he doesn't have too much time to do it. But it seemed like it was quick, easier money, to say the least.
And like, say, YouTube, for example.
Right. And $200, yeah, it would take a lot of work to get that through YouTube.
Right, yeah. So that's interesting because I don't know very much about Twitch, but I'm really excited to learn more about Twitch. And this is very much on the, I mean, this just recently happened. So it's exciting to me because, I mean, people are really taking this whole podcasting thing pretty seriously. And it's just on the verge of big companies really trying to, get the content from podcasters and get really good content that people really want to listen to.
Right.
And they're experimenting with various different ways. And okay, so one of the rabbit holes I've been going down in the last day or two, actually probably the week, has been all about Barstool Sports.
Yes, it has been for my wife, Quinn. She's been enjoying it.
definitely a newly converted stoolie. So excited about that. And
Barstool
really loving
Sports
it.
Is a media platform focusing on all sports and being that raw, edgier media company that says what they feel, and people love it.
Yeah, I think that that's really the key and heart of Barstool is the authenticity that people crave, that they don't want that polished ESPN, you know, look all the time. Sometimes it's really nice, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There are a lot of, we're in an interesting transition time period, right? I mean, all politics aside, you know, Donald Trump is a very controversial figure. Barstool has inserted itself as a controversial figure. And part of the controversy is not being so politically correct and saying what other people want you to say, right? And there's a sense of authenticity that comes with that people, I think, are craving as the internet has become just basically this fake world of people looking beautiful, doing all these cool things when really, you know,
we're all kind of locked at home.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, so, but besides just Barstool, I mean, it's not just sports either. They're kind of like they're an amazing lifestyle media brand now at this point.
Definitely.
And platform, one of the biggest growing. And the person I've really been focusing on the last day or so has been their CEO, Erica. And
yes.
She's amazing. I was listening to her podcast this morning.
And it's very impressive that they chose a female CEO because they are known for being very, very masculine.
Yeah, very male-centric for sure.
But it's great. So
she's helped grow it so much into what it is today. And I mean, she really had a vision for it. And I mean, she basically was a huge fan of Dave Portnoy, who's the guy who actually founded it, and just thought, you know, I don't want to change what you're doing. This is amazing already. I just want to help it grow and scale. And that's what she came from AOL. That's what she did. She knew how to grow and scale things. And so that's exactly what she's been doing. But interesting, I was listening to an interview with her, with Gary Vee.
Gary Vee.
Yes.
Successful entrepreneur, but big time motivational speaker.
Yes. Huge. And he had her on and they were talking about, you know, how COVID has affected both of their businesses and everyone's business and every, you know, what the future of Barstool is and how people have, how she has pivoted and how Barstool itself has pivoted.
Yeah, I'm curious because both of their businesses are focused on creating digital content. So I don't know how much they were affected, but I do realize Barstool is fully dependent on sports. And there was a period of time where there were zero sports.
Yeah, that was awful. That was not fun for them at all. But a part of it also is right before all this hit, they just moved into a brand new huge office.
Yeah.
You know, like they were really on this threshold of just scale, grow, right? They were acquiring different podcasts. They were acquiring talent and they were going big, right? And then COVID hit and sports stopped and people wanted content, but people couldn't be together in the office like they used to, right? Yeah. They had like a reality show that is based off of the show The Office, basically.
Yeah. In New York City,
which is hilarious. And it's I love it. I love watching it.
But at the point when the world was realizing how big of a issue COVID is.
Yeah.
They were in the heart of it in New York City.
Exactly. And they saw advertisers get really scared, right? And that's a huge part of how they make their money is just through advertising with podcasts, advertising in various different ways with, you know, their shows. And I think that they're geniuses in creating, you know, content that doesn't look like an ad, but it actually is like integrating a brand, right? But the brands who, you know, got shook from COVID basically said, you know, we don't really know. So not every brand. Some brands stuck and did not leave at all. Some questioned whether or not, you know, they should be aligned with Barstool or whatnot. And I mean, she's basically like, I just chalk it all up to everyone's very confused right now. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you don't know who your customers are right now and who they're going to be in the future, then maybe we shouldn't partner. And so they saw advertising kind of drop a little bit. But what they did is they said, okay, look, we just had this approach where we could just expand. Let's stop that right now because it's obviously not sustainable given where we're at in COVID land.
Yeah, not a growth period of time.
Exactly. And she just, I mean, they basically said, let's just be, the one thing that we do is we're really, really good at being present. And like just being present and looking around us and like, let's just get back to basics. That's what she said. She said, we're going back to basics. We're just going to be creating content. People are craving content that is authentic, that is genuine. And we're going to have to figure out a new way to really fund all of this content creation. That's not going to be advertising. I mean, we're not going to just toss all the advertising away. Some people are sticking around, but we got to figure out a new way to make money.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that I was really enjoying Dave Portnoy eating frozen pizza during COVID.
Yeah.
He usually eats pizza at various pizza shops all over the United States. But during COVID, he was eating frozen pizza and doing frozen pizza reviews. And though it was very different and not as entertaining,
yeah,
it definitely was a little bit of light, a little bit of sunshine in
for
my day.
For sure, yeah. He's hilarious. And that's the other thing, too, is it's not just like sports and lifestyle and whatnot. It's comedy. They're making people laugh.
Yeah.
Not everyone laughs with them, but mostly, I mean, anyone who follows them understands their humor.
Yeah, it's funny, a bit raunchy, but it's good. It's edgy humor.
I appreciate it. It's honest. It's real. But anyways, what I was going to say, though, one of the really cool things that I took away from this conversation with Erica and Gary Vee was she said the last 2 months have been the biggest for their commerce ever in the history of Barstool Sports.
So they're online.
Yeah. Online
merch sales.
Yeah. Like they've been really leaning into the merch. People want the merch. People want the type of merch that they are offering, you know, I mean, and their merch is really, it's well designed, but it's very on brand and it has like inside jokes and whatnot. But most importantly, it's athleisure, and no one wants to buy a dress right now. Everyone wants to hang out in their yoga pants, you know, and their sweatshirts and their crew neck shirts. Like it's killing it in the COVID game right now.
Interesting.
So yeah, they really leaned into merchandise. There's Barstool Sports. I mean, people are shopping online anyways right now, right? They can't go out of their house.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really, really interesting. Not only did they pivot, you know, their money-making model and it worked.
Right.
In a big way. But I thought her comment of we went back to basics and we pretended like we were a small business again. She's like, we stopped, you know, signing huge three-year deal partnerships, all this stuff. That's not in the cards right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to be out here on a limb. It to me, at least, it kind of sounded like maybe they got burnt by a couple of contracts, right?
It would make sense.
A lot of people did. I mean, honestly, a lot of people did because the phrase force majeure is now a common term that we all, if you're in business, you know what force majeure is.
Why don't you explain it?
Force majeure is a clause is typically in a lot of contracts. My personal experience with it is just was looking over event vendor contracts earlier this year for a company that I consult for. And force majeure is essentially just an act of, they call it an act of God or nature is preventing you.
Sounds so old school.
It really is. It is very old school, and it's gotten a complete makeover since COVID because it was such a broad general. It was like the one get out of free jail card, but at the same time, people were taking each other to court, really saying, "Well, look, it doesn't actually say pandemic in there."
Yeah, like when have we had a global situation that is affecting all companies to have to pull that one out?
Exactly. I mean, and to say a force of God, like what if I don't believe in God, you know?
So yeah, that's interesting, but the force of nature, I mean, no matter what, coronavirus clearly seems as though it fits in this clause.
Yeah, so, but the thing was, is that it was very vague. So people could pull out, but right. At the same time, if it was a multi-million dollar contract,
yeah,
you know, people are going to really litigate over it.
If they were involved in advertising a product or service that could not function
right
during COVID, for instance, if they were working with Ruth's Steakhouse or any restaurant or anything that like DraftKings that's fully dependent on sports happening, you got to pull out that claws. There's exactly. Like, could you ever see a world that had, there was times where there were zero sports.
I know.
I hope to never experience that again.
Did you remember when they actually, like, ESPN was like playing South Korean baseball or something like that?
Yeah, that came later though. I was grateful when that happened.
Well, that was before the NBA bubble. That was like when there was no sports and people were so desperate for sports, they just said, I won't watch anything at this point.
Well, they before that, we were just watching old replays. And it took out a lot of attention to the Michael Jordan documentary to fill in that gap of people missing sports.
Documentaries,
But yeah, anyway, so their business, clearly, it seems as though they were having a tough time due to the COVID, so they went back to the basics, focused on, I'm assuming, creating content via their blog, creating in-house video content, and then focusing on selling merchandise through their website. And their merchandise sales went up.
Skyrocketed. Like, I mean, because here's the thing. The reason why I thought that her concept of we went back to basics and we became small was so fascinating because she said we wouldn't have been able to pivot otherwise. You have to be nimble to a certain extent. And she said, I'm grateful that the culture of Barstool still remains true to what it was at the beginning because it's so familiar to everyone who still works there. It's when she said, yeah, let's just go back to basics. Let's just record you guys again. Like get back to New York and let's just get a camera in every studio. Everyone or do podcasts.
In everyone's house.
No, they, well.
Because there was a time where they were in lockdown for sure.
Yeah, but now they're not.
Yeah, now they're able to go back to work.
Yeah, but I mean, COVID did hit their office pretty bad. I mean, Dave Portnoy got it and a lot of people did, but they're coming back. Anyways, she just said, let's stick a camera in your house and whatever, and let's just keep recording you guys. That's how we got here. That's who we are. That's what people want. They want to see you. So let's just keep doing what we're doing and let's make some new merch and you guys wear it, you guys promote it. And the synergy of the content creation was a really interesting topic that she lightly touched on too, which was, okay, so they do a podcast, we're recording. And this is why, she's really the reason why I learned about the Amazon Twitch thing, right?
Okay.
So because she's really interested to seeing what the future of podcasting is going to look like because she sees as the CEO, when someone's recording a podcast, it's okay, so you get the podcast. That's great. That's the advertiser's happy. This is the content people are coming back for. But you're also not just recording it. You're also videotaping it. And then you slice that up into different clips depending on, like Call Her Daddy is one that's a little bit more scripted than others. So they'll just do clips while others are just they're just live streaming. And the one complaint that Barstool has been getting is there's like a lag in their live feed or whatever.
Oh, that's interesting. Makes sense though. Because their live stream is typically them watching sporting events. So if you have two TVs on and you're watching them watch the sporting event, which sounds weird, but sometimes they're pretty entertaining seeing their reactions because they will bet quite a lot of money on some of these games. I could see how that's a major issue because you're watching the TV, you see someone score a touchdown, and then 5 seconds later you see them getting all excited and amped up, and that would frustrate me for sure.
Yeah, so she's really interested in how that's going to get fixed in the future, and she definitely believes that that's going to happen at some point. Yeah,
it makes sense. Twitch seems like the platform that could do it too.
Yeah, for sure. And so I think, but that synergy, she's just saying when you create one piece of content, that's basically what they're trying to do is they'll take a piece of content that's like an hour, 2 hours, and they'll put it in so many different formats, right? They'll transcribe it maybe, and so that you can read it if you want to, or a blogger can use it. They'll put it on YouTube. They'll put it on all these different platforms that they have. I mean, it's interesting to see how they're doing this right now because it's really hard to come up with really good content right now when you're just sitting at home, right? Yeah. So it's got to be interesting and entertaining because it's dark right now. Like it is a dark world, it feels. It's not as bad as it seems if you're...
Or as it has been, but...
you know, people are, it's very doom and gloom right now. So people kind of want a little bit of escapism.
Yeah.
Right. And that's definitely what, you know, Barstool
provides.
But I think even more than that, I think that their value proposition is their authenticity. And I think that really shows through when they're doing live stuff. You know, I mean, you're not editing yourself. This is, and people like that. I like it. I'm really interested in it because it's not, there's nothing fake about it. You can't fake it.
Yeah. It's raw.
Yeah. And her philosophy is you got to lean into the controversy. You got to lean all the way in. And they definitely do. But
they do for sure.
You know, that's not what they're all about. It happens. But, you know. Anyways, I really have enjoyed, you know, just listening to some of her podcast episodes, and her latest one was with Guy Raz, you know, Guy Raz from How I Built This, and he used to host the TED Radio Hour.
He's great.
He's awesome. He just came out with a new book. Basically, it's called How I Built This, and it's about, you know, his favorite interviews and the lessons learned from interviewing so many entrepreneurs. And
very successful entrepreneurs at that.
Really successful. Like, the one you
top
say
dogs.
You say their company name and you probably know it, right? Yeah,
Whole Foods, Dell, you name him.
Yeah,
he's interviewed him.
Southwest Airlines.
Yeah,
RIP. So,
not quite yet.
No. The CEO he interviewed.
Oh,
yeah, I loved
he did
him.
Interview him.
Yeah,
that's right.
Or the founder. But anyways, one thing that I loved in that episode specifically that Guy Raz said. And I really do want to read his book. I'm so excited to be able to do that, whether it's through, you know, Libby or
library app,
or I don't know. Well, I'll somehow be able to get my hands on it. But Guy Raz said, you know, entrepreneurship. She asked, what is the one thing that you could say that you've learned that you take away about entrepreneurship? And he said, it is a skill that is learned by practicing and doing over and over and over and over again.
Oh, that's great news.
It's a muscle. He's like, it is. Seriously, he's like, there's nothing different about these entrepreneurs usually. Like, they all never expected the vision, the company to end up being as successful as they did. But what they did is they tried and failed and they tried and failed and they just kept going with it.
Yeah, just don't stop.
Don't stop. And I love that. I think Gary Vee said something to that extent in his interview with Erica as well, where he just said, yeah, your concept of just putting out content constantly, like that is obviously very successful.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a part of the process. It helps you create better content. It helps putting it out there, which gets more people's attention, which can build on something.
Exactly. And I mean, I was watching this video with Gary Vee and Erica, and it has like 389 views.
Whoa.
And it was published 2 months ago.
That's so crazy.
And I'm just like, what? You know, I mean, I'm going down this rabbit hole with Erica, and I'm looking at other podcasts that she's gone on as well. And not the Gary Vee one wasn't a podcast, but I mean, these other podcast videos on YouTube have like, you know, 200 views, 400 views. I'm like, why aren't more people watching this stuff? But maybe it's, maybe that's part of the issue that I have and you have with a lot of the social media. I mean, we're going to have to eventually get comfortable with it because we're probably going to spread ourselves out on different platforms to promote certain things. We're going to experiment like we always do, right?
Right. We're definitely going to have to put ourselves out there. But the video content, I do think people prefer to listen to the podcast than watch the podcast in general.
I don't know. I think that's changing. And that's one thing that Erica said. She said, it's really interesting. What we're finding is we're getting more views than we are downloads on podcasts.
Well, it didn't work out with the Gary Vee one for her with 389 views.
Well, this is a new, the YouTube channel that he started is his new media company that he just started, Vineyard Media. It only has like 3,000 followers on YouTube.
Mm.
So it's a relatively new platform or whatever still. I know. But It's interesting because there's, you know, obviously there's an algorithm that changes consistently with YouTube and you can't really control that. But
we'll see, though. But I want to go back to the Audible, Amazon Music ordeal. I want to learn more about this. So is this something that they're working on developing, or is this something that
yeah
it's in full throttle mode.
I think that I need to look a little bit more into it. I mean, that interview was published, or actually her podcast was published, I think 2 weeks ago or maybe a week ago. So I think it's relatively new. I have to look into it, but I know that they've already made deals with these celebrities. Right. And the deal was that you would record. And so
you would record
a video with Twitch and you would record audio. And
so that means that the podcasts themselves can't be edited.
Exactly.
They have to be in their raw format.
Exactly. But if you look at the list of who they picked, Will Smith is awesome. Will Smith can just go off the cuff, no problem. And that to me is a rare talent.
That is a very, very, very rare talent. But a few people can do it. We're learning how to do it. We're on, I don't know, day 5 or 4.
I think that we're going to get really good at it the more we practice. Honestly, we're bringing more energy. We're talking better, more clearly right now. And I think the reason why I disagreed with you about the watching versus listen is just taking a marketing lesson from Barstool, right? Mm-hmm. Why do the stoolies, they call, you know, their followers and fans stoolies, why do they love to watch the podcast? Or why do they love watching?
They like the visual reactions, perhaps. I mean, that's what I would think.
They want the visual reaction, but they also want to see how real it is. How it's on brand. I mean, it is so on brand. Like, that's the one thing that people at Barstool call her daddy on all the time is, well, why don't you record the whole thing live? Why don't you record the whole thing? Don't put clips out because you're, and they see, you know, a structured podcast, a scripted podcast as inauthentic.
This is very, very interesting because it was that podcast, Call Her Daddy, that you said she explicitly stated they record for 3 hours and then cut it down to an hour.
Yeah.
And they want the whole 3 hours just raw. Here it is.
Well, no, I think
I get it. I completely get
to
that.
To be honest,
that's very interesting.
I don't think that they record 3 hours straight. I think that they record and then they stop and they say, well, I didn't really like that part. Let's do that part again.
That's
right?
So interesting.
And so that they're in there for 3 hours, but it's because they're going through back over and over their like stories, their script, and say like, hey, but you should say it this way next time, you know? So they're directing it and producing it. And it, even on their social media, she said, yeah, everything, if I had it my way, everything would be produced. And it's the exact opposite of what Barstool people really want, but the Call Her Daddy gang, or the Daddy gang, and the stoolies are a little bit different.
Are they different, or do you think that's what everyone wants deep down?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Well, Dave Portnoy even said that he thinks or that he realized when all the controversy with Call Her Daddy was going down that they had no idea who the hell he was. Like, the people who follow Daddy gang or people who were part of the Daddy gang did not really know very much about Barstool, did not know who the hell Dave Portnoy was.
Right.
So it was very different.
Just for clarification, Call Her Daddy is a podcast that is owned by Barstool Sports.
Right.
And so Barstool Sports found this talent, these ladies, and hired them to do a podcast called Call Her Daddy, where they talk about edgy, more, I don't know, how would you describe
it? They talk about sex. They talk about a girl's perspective of sex, and like two girls in their early to mid 20s in New York City dating, and there was stories about their dating life and sex and all that stuff.
And after a year, it skyrocketed
to just completely blew up top
10 consistently.
It's really funny. I mean, some parts are cringy, but I think
It's hilarious.
It's so funny.
It's raw. It's authentic. And maybe that's what everyone wants nowadays more so than anything. I mean, I'm very excited about this Twitch Amazon opportunity or situation that you're discussing, because especially the last 2 days, I am banging my head against the wall trying to understand the perfect balance between quality and quantity. And I realized the more often we make content, the better our quality will get. But I'm not sure if we want to be spending our time hours and hours and hours of editing to ensure that it's at the top-notch level.
Exactly.
And originally, when we started, we were thinking, for sure, let's go all in on the highest quality once a week, something really well edited with background sounds and taking people to places they've never been and helping them paint these beautiful pictures of what's around, you know, what we're describing. And now we're at the point where it's like, let's just do it every day. If we want to catch up to those who have been making podcasts for years now, like Caller Daddy's been around for a year, and we kind of arriving late to the podcast game, in all honesty, the only way we can catch up is by putting out content more often.
Exactly.
And then our quantity will go up. Our quality should go up to their level once we, I mean, to me, it's simple math. As if they put out 52 in a year and we do 52 days in a row of putting out content, I like to think that we should maybe not be equal level, but we should be pretty darn close to where they're at as far as quality goes.
For sure. I mean, I think the more I listen to podcasts where people are just talking, you know, they're having conversations, the more I realize I know we can do this.
Yeah. And it's kind of strange too, that the more we listen to those conversations, the more we appreciate that type of format too.
Yeah, it is. It's true.
We used to love Radiolab, by far number one, probably still is, like, up there, but I don't know. It's been changing a little bit, but the more that I'm opening my mind up to listening to different styles of podcasting, which go beyond just interviewing someone interesting and hearing the back and forth between the two, the more I'm really, really enjoying just listening to someone else's conversation that is on a subject that is interesting. I mean, typically we pick the ones that we feel are of interest to us. And so naturally, if we just have conversations that are interesting to us, the market for who will be our listeners will be those that are like-minded or interested in the same subjects and focusing on growth, maybe focusing on the same type of goals that we are. Who knows? But I'd love to just try it out. It is weird getting comfortable being uncomfortable. That's something we all say all the time.
I know. And it's like we say that we can do that in hindsight, that, and we tell other people, this is how you got to get comfortable with the unknown.
Just go for it.
But like we consistently say, I think I said this yesterday, almost verbatim, it's a lot more difficult than it sounds.
Right. Definitely. Right?
I mean, when you're in it, it's difficult. It's easy to say, oh yeah, I was comfortable with it. That was really what got me through it. Like, yeah, it is. But when you're in it, it sucks, man.
Right. Let's keep it raw. So what are your thoughts that, like, kind of scare you about, like, putting out content on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about how I do have a bit of a fear of judgment and scrutiny that I'm really working on, just not giving a fuck. I really need to try to have more the mentality of no fucks given, really.
Right. So just having people talk behind your back or making comments?
Yeah, I mean,
is it both? Or
I don't really know if I have a fear. I think I just have an awareness of what people might say. Like, say someone in my family listens to it and then says, hey, did you hear Quinn and John's podcast? That's awful. Like, I don't understand it. But, you know,
it's interesting you said family, because I was going to say the first thing is, like, I'm not sure how many people that we don't know will be listening at first, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how we're promoting it and whatnot. But I think what gets me more excited, and this is what helps me get over the fear of whatever.
That was my next realm of question, so go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I'm getting ahead of
you. I'm very excited.
I think just the art of conversation has always been so fascinating to me.
Hmm.
When I'm listening to a really good conversation, oh man, I don't want my phone. Like, I'm not interested in anything else but that. And to me, the potential of being able to do that for others, but, you know, even for me, the potential is what helps me get through the fear.
Hmm.
The exciting potential of the more we practice, the better we're going to get. I don't really know what this is yet.
There's a lot of unanswered questions.
But I think that if we just stay true to who you and I are and are really as authentic as we can be and
working to get better,
I think there is a really underrated talent that is going to be very understood in the next 5 years, of someone who can come in, start talking, be recorded live, be recorded on the podcast, and by the time that person leaves, everyone's like, whoa, that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting. Well, I've always believed that our voice, our words are the most powerful weapon, the most powerful tool. It's everything. And let's sharpen our tool. Let's get those weapons out, and let's really focus on getting better at communicating our thoughts clearly to each other,
exactly,
to our listeners, and anyone else that's interested in hearing what we got to say. Because I sincerely believe what we're thinking, our thoughts, what we got to say is interesting. It's a connecting factor. There may be benefits in it. As we're figuring it out, it might be something as simple as connecting with others who are trying to answer those same questions that we're discussing.
Yeah, I'm loving talking to you this much on a daily basis. And it sounds really weird because we've been together, just the two of us, for how long, since quarantine, but this is pretty typical for us anyways.
Right. We typically talk a lot, but by setting a specific amount of time, which at this moment is an hour a day, to really, really focus on having a deep conversation that is something of interest or something that we're passionate about, that is pretty special. It like kind of puts us in a little bit of a boundary that enables us to develop our tools even further.
It does. And it really helps me sharpen my own skills of retaining what I read, listen to, watch, and being able to put it back out into my own words based on how I processed it.
Right.
And I think that's really difficult to do.
Hmm. Definitely. It's not easy.
On a consistent basis. I want to get really good at it. I want to be able to spend a whole day like reading, watching, listening, and then you and me, you know, about specific interesting topics, and then you and me just talk about them, about, you know, how we feel, about what's going on in the world. And
that'd be a cool job.
I think so. I mean, I don't want it to be like news based, but I just think that like we just need to be as authentic and genuine to us at our core of whatever this is. That's the only way people will connect with it.
Right.
It's the only way. I mean, I just want to connect with people through this.
Yeah.
That's really what I want to do. I want to like bring together a community of like-minded, curious people, you know, and no bullshit, really.
Yeah. Keep it honest.
Keep it honest. Keep it raw. I mean, we're not raunchy people, so it's not like we're not going to be saying anything too crazy, but I definitely think, you know, you and me, I want to just have fun. I want to have fun.
Having fun is key, I think, especially in the beginning phase. If you're not enjoying it, how are you going to do it when it's really not fun?
I know.
When it's miserable.
I don't know. Can I ask you, what are your fears about this, about recording every day and putting something out there?
It's very simple. I just want to make sure that it's of certain quality. I don't like thinking that people listen to it and they're thinking, what a waste of time, what a boring conversation.
Yeah.
So not interested in this. Good luck. They're gonna need a year get it to the point where it's of top-notch quality that I'm going to be wanting to listen to it more often. But
that's, I don't care.
That's kind of the part of the process. I like to think that if we put it out there and then they listen to one and they think, it's not quite there yet, maybe they'll come back at a later point in time and maybe they'll like it at another time. I do not expect anyone to listen to it like every single day. But I do think like it could be great that people are tuning in, checking it out. Oh, what's in the news or what's new? And then if they really like that one and we talked about our prior conversation, they're like, oh, I'll go check out the older episodes a little bit, you know. And if they really, really like it, then they might go back and watch them all.
Yeah. I think the one of the things too that I don't know, hopefully as this evolves, it will surprise us, I'm sure. but I definitely don't want to be a podcast that takes themselves too seriously.
I definitely don't want to be that. I definitely believe that we were that at the very beginning of doing this.
Yeah, I felt like I was a little bit that way. I mean, you know, having a PhD does this weird thing to you where you feel like
earning the PhD, having it.
Yeah, well, earning it, you know, especially if you're not in academia, there's this weird perception of yourself and that others have of you. You know, I don't really know how to explain it, but I felt like I needed to take myself really seriously now. Yeah,
I'll give it a shot. I think when we're going through the process of earning our PhD, we consistently felt a sense of imposter syndrome.
Right.
And that's where you don't feel like you're qualified to be a doctor, and you're questioning everything you're doing and making sure that it's aligned with what you believe that role should be.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to play that role often. I mean, I didn't tell any of my professors about, you know, the properties we were investing into, yeah, or what I was doing for entrepreneurial side gigs as fun.
Yeah.
But we had to play that type of role, and it forced us to prevent a little bit of our authenticity to come out of fear of not being able to get the degree. So we're a bit relearning how to put all that noise to the side.
Yeah.
And when we first started recording our ideas of episodes and so on, we were starting off just by the script, and the script ended up just sounding so boring because it wasn't a conversation. It was just these are the facts, and it was like a lecture more so.
Yeah.
And now we're at the point where we're saying, screw the lecture. Let's go all in on the conversation. Let's go all in on the discussion.
Yeah.
Let's keep it raw. If things aren't fact-checked perfectly, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right. We can still have a conversation about it. And we can just say, at this point, we're not 100% sure what the exact answer is, but we like to believe, or we think it's quite plausible that this is what it is. And
right. That's
taken some time to reconfigure in both of our brains.
That is so dead on. I mean, it has been, it's like
Thank
a re
you.
It's a re you're welcome. It's like a rewiring of our brains almost.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say it's like
not back
going
to anything
back.
Yeah, not back to anything old, because we can't go back to what we were.
No.
We've grown too much.
It's taking what we've learned from the PhD and extending it into a non-theoretical academic world.
Yeah.
So we are a rare breed, you and I, where we got the PhD and we did not pursue a 10-year track position, and we're really not pursuing much of a teaching position at this point in time either.
No.
We're really focusing on getting out there to the public and just working on our craft of building businesses and loving the work and creating something of great value.
Yeah.
I don't know any other PhD student that is doing something like that right
now.
Yeah,
not yet. Not right now. And just as you're talking, it just kind of came to me that, you know, I think part of my problem with when we were writing scripts and whatnot,
yeah,
was my need to sound perfect, I guess, you know, like
right.
be sound perfect and be presented and taken seriously.
Yeah, not sounding as an academic individual would.
Like, right.
You're going to call her Dr. Button. You expect Dr. Button to sound
exactly
smart. You don't expect to see Dr. Button partying. You expect to see Dr. Button studying.
Exactly. Like, what kind of category have I placed myself into because I got a PhD? Like,
and so the words themselves, we didn't want to swear because we want to be clean cut. We're trying to act professional, suit and tie style. And unfortunately, that's not the full picture.
It's just not. Not
your full picture.
It's not anyone's reality right now. It's just
right.
not anyone's real life. I mean, life is messy. And even if you have a PhD, even if you have an MD, even if you have XXX, whatever it is that you have that is impressive to other people, your life is not the same. It is not normal. It shook us all, right? Yeah. And I think, yeah, I don't know anyone else. I don't know very many females, let alone anyone, like you said, with a PhD who's trying to talk, just like have conversations. I mean, I don't want to sound stupid, right?
Yeah.
How could I ever sound stupid? I have a PhD. I don't want to get judged that way. Who cares? I don't really care.
Yeah, we earned the degree. We know that we got it. There's still in the poster, paper. What do you call it? Cone.
Yeah.
Haven't opened it up and framed it yet, but
we're going to.
We got it, and we shouldn't question us earning it because it was a lot of work, and we're proud of that work we put out there. We put it on our website.
Yeah, it was like the public. Hardest. It's the hardest thing I've ever done.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know.
It's one of my proudest accomplishments.
I would say it was the hardest thing that we've ever done because it required us to separate ourselves from who we are.
Right.
That's why it was really, really difficult. For some people, it's a piece of cake, but for us, it was really, really difficult to just ignore what we wanted to do and what we believed in and just sit down and think very, very, very narrowly minded about one specific subject.
Right.
Not narrowly minded, but not allowing ourselves to take the huge step back and think, what are the practical implications? No. Just focus on this little thing. You're going to add a little bit of brick to the wall of knowledge. In order to do so, you can't be thinking about the practical implications. Practical implications is the wall.
Yeah.
And you're just doing the brick. So if you want to get the brick right, make sure you're focusing on that brick.
Yeah, that's true. That was a good metaphor, right? That's a good analogy. Yeah, I think it was so focused. And we did, I mean, even when we were in our programs, people knew we weren't the typical PhD student.
Yeah.
I wasn't a typical teacher, professor, you know, doing my PhD. People were like, wait, what? You're going to get a PhD? That doesn't make, wait, what?
You're getting a PhD?
Yeah. Or after,
I definitely knew that from the beginning. It was rough, but you find your little.
There were people.
Little area.
There were people along the way who said, "You know what? I don't really care. I like him.
Yeah,
and I think he's going to add something to the department." And they said that about me too. And we did. We changed it up a little bit. I was the first person to do a dissertation with eye tracking technology. I did it on electric vehicles. What? Like, what? I mean, I'm in design, housing, merchandising here. You know, this doesn't make, no one has ever, it's not normal. Like that would normally be in, you know, engineering or something.
Atypical.
This is atypical. Exactly. Yeah. So, but, and with you, I mean, you got the opportunity to basically learn from one or two, he is considered either number one or two researcher in the entrepreneurship field. He came from psychology. He's amazing. Dr. Robert Barron. Look him up. He's got lots of really amazing publications. He's very, very respected. And you were the last person he advised in their PhD, which is really special and cool. And now you guys have this really amazing
friendship,
you know, and it's
very grateful for him.
It's not. And I think, you know, there are moments in life where, I mean, I never thought I was going to get a PhD. That was not on the itinerary. That was never a thought in my mind.
You didn't think you were going to get a master's.
I came out of UC Davis in undergrad, and I was like, get out of here. I'm never coming back. Like, I never want to go back to school. Real life is way cooler, which it is for sure. But there's a lot of, and there are a lot of really great things about education. We learned a lot about how the whole academic system in the United States works.
Yeah.
You know, they're good and bad, just like anything else. But I think overall, I would definitely say going to a university like Oklahoma State University, which doesn't cost an arm and a leg necessarily relative to others.
Right.
There are so many resources on campus. It's so fun. You feel like you're in a family. Like I really did not feel connected to my alma mater, UC Davis, in undergrad, but I feel so connected with Oklahoma State University. I'm glad I got a football team I can cheer for.
Yep. You got that orange blood now.
I do. And if we have kids or if we don't, whatever. But if we do, I'm going to probably suggest that they go there because it was so much fun.
Well, they'll definitely go there with us to go to a game or two.
Yeah, exactly.
And it will be up to them if they want to continue to their, you know, if they go to the We'll see.
We'll see. We don't even have a dog. Look, Oklahoma to us, and this is very, I would say not very many people have this perspective. Oklahoma to us was like the land of opportunity. When we came out for Jonathan's graduation, we were living in Morocco, and we came out, we were just blown away. I mean, we had been living in, you know, developing countries for like 2-3 years or something like that. And we came back to California. California was California. It was no big deal. And we drove over to Oklahoma and we went to that campus. Oh my God, the eyes just popped open, and they were creating a student incubator and they had a master's of entrepreneurship, which
this was such a crazy time for us. I'll never forget it. I want to get into some of the details. We flew back to California, did a college road trip where we spoke at all different universities, starting up in Sacramento at Sac State, and then going down all the way to Arizona State, and then finishing off at Oklahoma State University.
Yep.
And the night before we met with them, I'm pretty confident we were like sleeping in the damn car.
Oh yeah, we were sleeping in the Walmart parking lot in our little Echo green. We call it the Gecko because it's a green Echo.
Yeah.
And it's our little Gecko.
It was. No,
also, by the way, we went to Arizona State University and talked. Yes. But then we not only did that, we actually brought a group of Arizona State University students with us across the border to Mexico.
Right.
We walked across the border with some girls from Tempe so that we can distribute school supplies.
Yeah.
In an area that John and I had already been before. There was a school right across the border and it was perfect. And they had an amazing time. Hopefully it was memorable, life-changing, but it was
ideally life-changing, but I'm sure it was very memorable for
well
sure.
For I mean, I think almost all of them, they had been living in Arizona for at least 3 years. They were like juniors or seniors,
and 3 hours away from the border,
3 hours away, and they had never ever gone, and they had never walked across the border. I mean, walking across the border is a trip. It is pretty interesting, but anyways,
it was a wild time.
It was crazy.
I remember waking up in the Walmart parking lot.
And that was a trip.
It was a different time. I mean, it all is based on your perspective. It was so normal to us to be waking up in the Walmart parking lot because we were just living in Nicaragua in some seriously impoverished areas.
Yeah.
And it was normal. Those were our friends. That was our life. That was our work. And when we came back, and I don't remember exactly. We probably drove all night.
Yeah.
And then we arrived there and we just said, screw it, let's go to bed. Went to bed, woke up, and we drove around campus, and it was just astonishing.
It was awesome.
Beautiful. And we just couldn't believe the resources that they had available. And we went from not having to make our own resources or like working so hard in Messiah to try to just find little piece of leather or like little metal things to stamp LOTB for Life Out of the Box on each bracelet.
Yeah.
I went to like 50 stores in one day. I'll never forget, just asking people over and over and over again to then go into campus. And it's like, what can't you get on campus as a tool? You can get the newest technology. And if they don't have it, there's a way that you can get it. People will help you. People are paid to help you get everything you could ever need.
Yeah.
And that was kind of how we ended up going to Oklahoma.
Well, and it wasn't even just, I mean, it wasn't just the resources that they offered that blew us away. I mean, those definitely blew us away. I mean, like even just having a studio on campus where you can record a podcast, you could record music.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 3D printers you could use for free. It was, I mean, you can get someone to help you with your patent if you had a product idea,
right,
and whatnot. Anyways, the biggest thing to me was going into Oklahoma, and we were different, and they saw that we were different,
mm-hmm,
and we saw they were different, mm-hmm, and it was a magical partnership basically between us and Oklahoma State University and all the people that we met there, from Craig to Ken and Bruce, everyone.
Yeah, I just clearly remember us going in and telling our story to Dr. Waters, and he goes, so what can I do for you?
Yeah.
And we replied, well, we were just hoping maybe we can speak in one of your classes at some point.
Yeah, that's what we were there. I mean, we were like, well, we could just speak on campus while you're graduating anyways, you know?
And he goes, I got a better idea. And then it was like, here, we want you to be part of this university. We'll set it up so Quinn can get a full scholarship to get the master's, and then your business can be a part of the incubator, and we'll give you everything we can to help you succeed. I was like, holy cow. Like, that's like that might be one of the biggest gifts it might be the biggest gift we've ever received. Now that I'm thinking about it.
I know. We love that Craig Waters, you know. I mean, it felt like fate, you know.
it really did.
But, you know, I think what I'm kind of trying to get at is, you know, with the PhD program also, it was very much the same. You know, when we came there first initially, it was, oh, you guys created this business. We really want you to be a part of it. And this is really special and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And the PhD program, we were definitely considered to be not the typical PhD student, I think, definitely by not. Both professors and students. But one thing that we both noticed, you know, in a lot of PhD programs was there weren't a lot of Americans either. There were a lot of international students, which they have this amazing work ethic because they have to. I mean, this immigrant mindset, right?
Right.
I loved it. I loved being around them. But they weren't lucky enough to get born in America. And here I am born in America. And I don't know anyone else who has a PhD who's American, right? Who's my friend. Now I do, because you had quite a few Americans in your program. But I just think that there's something to be said for being different in an arena, where I think a lot of people take it for granted. For example, like you were saying, in Nicaragua, we were creating opportunities. We're pulling it out of our ass. Like, we did not know it was so hard to generate like productivity around us, basically, you know, like trying to figure out what the opportunity was. But remember, babe, like you said, you went to 50 different stores to find, you know, some tools and some leather and whatnot, and you fail. That's part of entrepreneurship. That's part of what made us so different and so special, because we weren't just talking about it. We actually did it. Like, this was not easy. We're trying to create a retail company that gives school supplies back to that community from Nicaragua. I mean, and we did not know anyone. We didn't speak Spanish very well when we first got there, you know?
Still working on it.
But I just think, I guess that's, as I'm talking through this, I'm kind of reframing in my mind how I've thought the PhD is kind of like a, you know, having the title of a PhD that I earned almost kind of confines me to being a serious person.
Yeah. There are times where you did think it could be more of a hindrance than a benefit.
Yeah, I did. And I still do to some extent. I think that, if I'm looking for a job and I just need money and I want a job and I have a PhD, they're going to probably say, well, you're overqualified, right?
Bullshit. I think that's a wrong assumption, in my humble opinion.
Well, anyways, whatever. I think that just think about it though. Like, what job would I want to go and apply for now?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it shouldn't even be part of the conversation. That's not where your head's at.
Well, I didn't want a 10-year job, right? Neither did you. We didn't want to go into academia, right? That was, 10-year is a whole other topic we'll save for later.
We did love teaching.
I loved teaching.
The beauty of getting to work with students who are there to grow their brains into their ideal self.
Yes.
I mean, that is a dream come true. We love it. We hope to continue to do it. And maybe this is one odd way that we can kind of do it with lots of people.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Because, I mean, The PhD, I just am trying to embrace it as like, okay, you earned it. You did it. My brain changed a lot in a lot of really great ways, expanded beyond what I thought I could do.
Right.
Really. It showed me I could do something that I never thought I could do, which is always a good thing.
And it showed you the process of science, which is so valuable.
Oh my God. It's so valuable. I mean, people will hear us on here. It's really difficult to have a strong opinion once you've gone through the process of science, because
how knowledge is created.
Yeah. You know, when you're stating an opinion, that's your bias. And that's something that, as you know, a scientist and a researcher, you're constantly trying to pull yourself away from being too into the matter so that you can actually objectively present what you're trying to explain, what phenomenon you're trying to explain. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but I guess what I'm getting at, slowly but surely, is I'm starting to see the PhD as actually a really, it's a unique thing in the podcasting world.
Right. Yeah.
It's really rare. It's unique. And
definitely.
And anytime that we can go into an arena where you and I have something different, and that's what we learned at Oklahoma State University. I do think to an extent, we don't have to get in too much into it, but the environment of the incubator when we first got there was unbelievable. It was awesome. It was like creating our own environment, right?
Yep.
Of surrounding ourselves with other hardworking entrepreneurs. Yeah.
Right.
But slowly it became, I mean, there is something to be said for the failures that we encountered constantly without the resources. Like, I do think as an entrepreneur, you do have, you can't, I can't imagine that the longevity of an entrepreneur's career in entrepreneurship, creating multiple businesses, is not going to encounter those failures. And I think in a way, absolutely, a university, because it has so many resources to offer, it almost prevents student entrepreneurs to fail.
That's an interesting thought.
Well, I mean, it just
puts it on them.
Well, it just doesn't, they're just not, they don't have to seek out so much.
Yeah.
It's kind of right there.
It is a comfortable bubble that, you know, sometimes things just don't work out,
though. Yeah.
We have to admit to that.
100%.
But it is so easy within a campus environment that is focusing on entrepreneurship to figure out how to get those resources. There's someone who you can talk to that's an expert on this or whatever it is. So
yeah, and some kids didn't even just like ask. I mean, sometimes like that's the learning lesson, is you just got to start asking people around you, just right, looking for it, you know, opportunity recognition. But
so you were saying, though, it's the being special, like being unique.
Yeah, being different.
That got us there.
Yeah.
And it's the being unique aspect that perhaps might allow us to succeed with this podcast that pursuing.
I hope so. I that's the perspective I'm taking right now. I mean, yeah. I think, like I said, Oklahoma was the land of opportunity for us. We did not really, I mean, when we first got there, it was like culture shock, man. I mean, this is, I grew up in America, but I grew up on the West Coast, and this is a very different culture that we were both immersed in Oklahoma, but I loved it. Like, we both loved it. We fully embraced it, just like we fully embraced Nicaragua and Morocco and stuff. But Oklahoma was so easy to love and just lean into, you know. It was like, it was awesome. So we were different. They saw we were different. They were different. It all kind of worked out. So I think, you know, and if you bring it all around with like Barstool too, I would say that what made them so killer in the sports industry that ESPN had to take a look at them and kind of change things is they were different. They were super unconventional. It was different.
They were not normal.
Yeah. People really like things that are unique. And I think that we're all becoming that even more so, which I think is a good thing. Like in the 1950s, there was so much homogeny. I mean, it was Leave It to Beaver. This is what you do. You're a mom. You do this, you do that. And now we have, I mean, it's like we've just opened the whole Pandora's box, and now you can do whatever the hell you want.
You can be more authentic than ever.
And if that's the way that the internet is going, I am all for that.
Yeah.
Like, I would rather, I mean, because it could go in lots of different ways. Obviously, it's changed and it's evolved into fake news and all of this stuff. And, you know, mental health issues with little girls. I mean, the suicide rate for young teenagers has increased tenfold because of, well, for a lot of different reasons, but a lot of it points to the insecurities that are amplified through social media, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, trying to fit into something that you're not. So I guess the biggest message that you're trying to emphasize is we believe that there's a benefit from being yourself, from pursuing or leaning into those things that make you unique.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Allow that to blossom and ride that wave. Like, being one in a million is always better than being one of 10 or one of 100. So whatever makes you special or unique, lean into it, because it could be the factor that allows you to get to where you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
On that note, I do want to thank you for being amazing.
I love you.
You are one in a million.
You're one in a million.
I appreciate
you.
I really appreciate that we made this podcast. I think it's very, very interesting, and I hope that others find it beneficial or something that perhaps they connect with. And I think it's a good time to say goodbye to our friends.
Okay, goodbye, friends. Thanks for chatting. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great day. Time to keep going.
Love you.